This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And it is time now for the Noon Ag Show, brought to you by Macoupin County Farm Bureau, where membership means value. Wayne Schaefer, your country insurance agent in Jerseyville. M&M Service Company, the local solution to your world of needs. And McAdams Millwright Service. And now with the Noon Ag Show, here's Gabe Osborne.
Thanks, Levi. Now for Ag News here on a Friday afternoon. Climate change, rural broadband, and civil rights were among key topics as USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack testified before the House Appropriations Agricultural Subcommittee this week. Top Ag Appropriations Republican Kay Granger of Texas wanted to know from Vilsack why billions in USDA broadband dollars the panel approved in recent years has not yet been spent.
I expect and anticipate you're going to see the distribution of those resources in the very near future. Now that we have sort of simplified and clarified the rules under which the program is going to operate.
While making sure that upload and download speeds are increased in a way that makes sense with today's needs. That, Vilsack says, also covers climate change, part of the Biden infrastructure and budget plan.
The American Jobs Plan has resources for climate smart agriculture, bio-based manufacturing, clean energy conversion. This budget also contains resources consistent with that vision of taking full opportunity of climate, increase in the climate hubs, opportunities for rural utilities to convert to clean energy, a civilian climate core, increased research in climate.
And on rooting out a climate of discrimination at the USDA.
When I was last secretary, we focused on the settlement of the Pigford cases and other class actions for discrimination. We're moving beyond that now to look at how we might be able to root out systemic barriers that exist in our programs today that have created a significant gap between those who've had full access to our programs and those who have not.
Vilsack also stressed anti-poverty efforts, farm productivity and resiliency amid the pandemic, and fighting food and nutritional insecurity, but was most excited about advancing his vision that climate-smart agriculture will be the key idea to completely change the economy of rural America. The U.S. Drought Monitor shows a tale of two regions, the East and the West. The Western U.S. and the latest Drought Monitor released yesterday Thursday shows much of the region in drought categories, with several areas classified in an extreme or an exceptional drought, the two most severe categories. Comparatively, the eastern United States is mostly drought-free from the eastern seaboard to the central plains about Kansas City. Drawing a line from the eastern border of Texas to the north is where much of the trouble begins. Having missed out on rainfall, conditions continue to deteriorate in south-central Oklahoma and in north, south, and west Texas. Meanwhile, much of the west remained dry. Where precipitation did fall in the Pacific Northwest and the northern Rocky Mountains, it either missed the drought-inflicted area or wasn't enough to overcome the shortage. Decreases in water allocation and reduced or negligible forage are causing livestock producers to cull or sell their herd. Fire crews are also arriving in California much earlier than normal. The Fertilizer Institute recently announced two new updates to crop nutrient use tools. The tools provide the industry with scientifically backed data to better track nutrient use and better balances across the U.S. Working together, the Nutrient Use Geographic Information System and the Soil Test Summary are an index of performance, both agronomic and environmental. The tools indicate how well a cropping system uses crop nutrient. The two platforms can help provide an estimate of nutrient deficiencies and nutrients susceptible to loss, providing the fertilizer industry and farmers with insight into improving nutrient use, efficiency, and nutrient balance. Corey Rosenbusch, TFI President and CEO, says data from the tools position the organization to, quote, collaboratively work with partners and soil testing labs to aggregate and analyze this information for our members and our stakeholders. Both NUGIS and the Soil Test Summary are collaborations between TFI, the Foundation for Agronomic Research, and Plant Nutrition Canada. You can find access to both tools online at tfi.org. And this year's grilling season rally in the livestock markets is higher than normal, but it's fueled by vaccine availability, stimulus checks, and the opening of baseball parks across the country. The cattle market analyst Ed Searwine writes in Cattle Business Weekly, and the daily spot choice box beef cutout ended last week, April 9th, at $272.17, which was $19.32 higher compared to the close on April 2nd, which was Good Friday. Last year, it was $223.93 on the same Friday, which was $6.51 lower after jumping higher during the panic retail buying amid the coronavirus pandemic last year. However, last year then skyrocketed much higher during the packing plant shutdowns, topping out at $475 in early May. Last week, sales totaled 6,865 loads sold for the week, 153 loads higher than the previous week. Exports were reported at 956 loads, which was good, but 116 loads lower compared to the previous week and about 800 lower than 2 weeks ago, which is normal to see when prices skyrocket higher. And we're back here in your afternoon farm show and in other ag news. Brazil safrina, or second corn crop, has become major competition in the world export market. It is second only to corn sourced here from the United States. 30 years ago, Brazil didn't play on the world export market, not even for soybeans. It's now the number one exporter of whole soybeans. A decade ago, they didn't really play in the world export market for corn, and that's changed too, according to U of I ag economist Gary Schnittke.
Currently, Brazil is the second largest country in terms of exports. We had 2.5 billion bushels projected for 2020-21, and Brazil has 1.5 billion. That is almost doubled since 2016, and again, that's largely due to the increased safrina corn crop, or that second crop corn.
This expansion is directly related to soybean production in Brazil. The growing season there is long enough that farmers can grow full-season soybeans followed by corn. As soybean acreage has expanded in Brazil, it has also allowed for safrina corn acreage to expand. The same acre raises two crops per year for the export market, one for beans and one for corn. And talking about crops, farmers here in Illinois have started planting corn and beans last week when the warm weather was around. Illinois Corn Grower Association Executive Director Rodney Weinzerl says some farmers were busy, especially south of Interstate 70.
People were running pretty hard on both corn and beans, probably some around Springfield area. In fact, I know of at least one farmer that's done with corn between Springfield and Jacksonville. But just a few people were maybe running around here for a day or so.
And according to this last week's USDA crop report that was out on Monday, 5% of Illinois corn acres have now been planted, which is ahead of last year and the five-year average by 4%. And it looks like more field work will be done over the next few weeks after that heavy rainfall in parts of Illinois this last weekend. But drier and colder temperatures are here to stay with us through the rest of April, according to Freeze Notice weather meteorologist Dan Hicks.
The weather pattern's turning cooler across much of the central and eastern U.S., and it looks like most precipitation across Illinois on the light side. As you mentioned, west central, northwest Illinois, I saw some reports as much as 2 or 3 inches of rain that fell over the weekend, and that has pushed April totals so far well above normal in some of those areas. The southern through eastern part of Illinois generally has had lighter April precipitation with amounts below normal. You know, so far up until the current time, April has been a pretty mild month with temperatures as much as 4 to 8 degrees above normal so far in the northern part of Illinois, 1 to 4 degrees above normal in the south. But it looks like we're kind of turning the corner to a cooler than normal weather pattern, which could continue right through the end of the month the way it appears right now. The upper level flow is becoming more northwesterly, and it looks like we're going to have Canadian air coming down into the Midwest fairly frequently into late April. So overall, I think that over the next 1 to 2 weeks, we'll see temperatures averaging below normal, and it's pretty unlikely we'll see any readings as warm as we saw about a week ago for some time now.
In some areas of Illinois this last week has seen some frost in the overnight and early morning hours. And with the boating season nearly upon us, and after the spike of interest last year, the IDNR is promoting safety on boats. Rachel Torbert notes the spike in interest last year very well may continue into this year. And with that, there's lots of safety measures to keep in mind.
We're already seeing some folks out on the lakes, especially our fishermen are, you know, they are out and ready to go. And we'll begin to see some of those recreational watercraft out on Clinton Lake and out on lakes across the state here coming up. So it really is time to start thinking about boating safety. And I think really, especially this year, because you know, we're coming off of the pandemic and we still have some of those pandemic restrictions in place, which means a lot of people were looking for ways last year to mm-hmm. recreate with their family. Anecdotally, we've seen boat purchases on the rise. And so mm-hmm. that means there are more people out there who have maybe purchased a recreational boat, a fishing boat, and haven't done that before. And so they don't really know what they need to have on the boat before they head out. So, mm-hmm. a couple of those things, you know, you need to make sure that when you're out, of course, you have your boat titled and registered, but on things that you need to have on your boat, you make sure you have life jackets for every person on the boat. If you have a kid on the boat who's under 13 and you're underway, they have to have a life jacket on. Mm-hmm. Now, adults don't, but kids absolutely have to have it on. Make sure you have a fire extinguisher. Make sure you have a proper ventilation system for your boat. Your boat battery is in good working shape. You have an engine cutoff switch. You have visual distress signals. You have your navigation lights. And so those are all things that if you're out on the water and you encounter some of our conservation police officers, if they stop you, those are things they're going to check. They want to make sure you have those things on your boat, not because they want to ruin your day, because they want you to be safe.
Sober operation of those watercraft is of the utmost importance for law enforcement officials. Torbert stresses having a designated operator if there's going to be alcohol on the watercraft. And moving on to local ag news to wrap up your Friday morning report. The Macoupin County pork producers will be holding a cookout this morning that will be held on the Carlinville Square starting at 11 this morning. And the 4x4's 4-H Club in Macoupin County is holding a food drive now through next Saturday, the 24th. Items being collected are canned goods, soups, macaroni and cheese, peanut butter, jelly, and more. Collection boxes are located at Randy's Market in Gillespie and Benelde, the Benelde Public Library, and at the Associated Bank in Mount Olive. If you need more information on how to donate, call 217-835-2222. And that'll wrap up your Ag News here on a Friday afternoon. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by an email at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So again, for your Friday afternoon, April 16th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.